She is the Director of Nutrition Assistance and Budget Policy at Feeding America, the nation's largest hunger relief organization, representing over 200 food banks nationwide. She works on federal hunger and nutrition policy with a focus on SNAP and child nutrition programs. And as a chair of the 50-member Food Policy Working Group, Sophie engages diverse national organizations in hunger and nutrition policy and coordinates their advocacy efforts. Previously, Sophie spent several years working as a legislative aide in Congress. Welcome, Sophie.
I did not print my notes, so I'm going to be reading off my computer. Let's see if I can make this work. Okay. Thanks, everyone, for being here today. It's a really important conversation, and really glad to be up here with Becca and Helen. I work closely with them back in D.C., and it's a really great relationship to be able to see all those different perspectives on the Farm Bill. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the nutrition assistance programs in the Farm Bill and how they're working to both reduce hunger and promote nutrition. First, let me tell you a little bit about Feeding America and who we are. Oh, and I should state that I have no relationships to disclose. Feeding America is a national network of over 200 food banks. Those food banks really serve as big warehouses. They're sourcing food, they're distributing food. We have fleets of trucks. We're rarely the ones who are actually putting food in the hands of people. We do that through our network of agencies. So those 200 food banks, in turn, work through over 60,000 agencies, and we're serving 37 million people each year. 14 million of those are children. We work, in addition to kind of the traditional food banking that you might think of, soup kitchens, pantries, and the like, we are working through increasingly innovative programs, mobile pantries to reach rural areas. We operate summer and after-school feeding programs to serve children when they're out of school, senior-focused programs. More and more of our food banks are doing nutrition education, operating community gardens. So they're really these great hubs of partnership and innovation in communities around the country. So, hunger and nutrition. I wanted to start by giving a little bit of context for the consideration of the Farm Bill and these programs. This is a chart that shows unemployment from just before the recession to now, and as we're all very familiar, it just jumped dramatically in December 2007 is when the recession began, and the need for food assistance naturally also increased dramatically at that time. The number of people living in food insecure households increased by 35% in the first year of the recession. It went up from 36 million people to 49 million people. We're still at 49 million people. So unemployment has started to fall. The economy has started to strengthen, but it's not strengthening for low-income households. They're typically the last to recover from a recession. If you can imagine, the majority of jobs that were lost in the recession were kind of mid-wage jobs. The majority of jobs that have been created in the recovery are low-wage jobs. So if you have low education, low skills, you're now competing with folks that were in those mid-wage jobs previously for low-wage jobs. You're going to be the last to be hired. You're going to be the last to recover from the recession. And I think it's important to remind ourselves of that elevated need as we talk about programs in the Farm Bill. This map is outdated, and one of these days I'll get an intern to update it, but not much has changed. And the broad point here is that the regions of our country that tend to have high food insecurity also tend to have high obesity. And so very much food insecurity and obesity exist in the same areas, but they also exist really in the same families. And there's increasing awareness and understanding that households that have trouble affording enough food also have trouble affording the right kinds of food. And the impacts of food insecurity on public health and on wellness for both children and adults are well understood. We at Feeding America did some research a few years ago and realized that the majority of our clients are visiting food banks regularly. We're not an emergency source of food anymore. And this has really prompted us to reconsider the responsibility that we have and the types of food that we're distributing. If somebody's coming once in a crisis situation, it's maybe a little bit less important than when you're a regular source of food and you're giving them food the majority of months of the year. And so we've really been reevaluating kind of the role that we can play in terms of that overlap between hunger and obesity and nutrition and wellness. We have, as I mentioned, more and more food banks are doing nutrition education, community gardens. We have some interesting pilot programs looking at diabetes intervention, making sure that clients have the food that they need to manage their illness. And we have a network-wide goal to increase the amount of fresh produce that we're sourcing. So let me quickly go through the major Farm Bill nutrition assistance programs. SNAP is the biggest, of course, and there's a lot of text here, and hopefully you guys will be able to access all these slides for reference. SNAP was reaching 47 million people each month. Obviously, it grew considerably during the recession and remains an important source of food and nutrition for low-income families. And as you can see, 83% of SNAP households are living at or below the poverty guideline. Over 75% of households include a child, senior, or disabled person. This program is very targeted at our most vulnerable in our society. SNAP is also the most under threat in the Farm Bill. And there's also, I should mention, a cut that went into effect just a few days ago. I wanted to share this slide to give you some context to the cuts. I mean, $40 billion in cuts in the House Farm Bill. It's sort of $40 billion is such a huge number. What does that even mean? And folks may be familiar that SNAP benefits were cut for all participants starting on November 1st. The green, the lower, darker green there, that's the cut that just went into effect November 1st. So the impact of that in 2014, if you translate those SNAP benefits into actual meals, it represents over half of the equivalent of what our food bank network distributes in terms of meals in a year. So we would have to increase our distribution by half in 1 year just to make up for the cuts that just went into effect. If you layer on the cuts that are in the House Farm Bill, it exceeds, I mean, you can barely see it, but it nudges out. It's about 3.4 billion lost meals in a year. It's a huge amount of impact on low-income families, and the idea that they have the resources to make up that lost benefits, or that their communities have the resources to make up the loss in SNAP benefits is not accurate. And for another perspective on this, according to the annual survey that USDA does on household food security, a food secure household is spending an average of $2.67 per meal. The SNAP benefit on average is $1.40 per person per meal. So the benefits, which were already inadequate after this cut that just went into effect, are even less so. Another important program for our network is the Emergency Food Assistance Program. This provides commodities for distribution through food banks and other emergency food providers. All USDA commodities have nutrition standards in terms of, you know, low salt, low sugar, low fat, some of the most nutritious product that we are able to distribute, and accounts for about a fifth of the food that we're pushing out through our network. Folks may be familiar with the Commodity Supplemental Food Program. This is a monthly food package targeted primarily at low-income seniors. The Farm Bill would officially make it a seniors-only program. Right now, it's about 97% seniors. It used to serve a lot of the same populations, the WIC population, but this proposal in the Farm Bill would kind of reflect in law the changes that have already happened in the program naturally over the course of time. Again, CSFP, it's distributing USDA commodities, those same nutritious commodities, but they're choosing specific foods that provide nutrients that tend to be missing in the target population. So for seniors, this includes a lot of protein, different vitamins and fiber that you know, nutritionists have identified as being lacking in their diet. And then the Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Snack Program in schools. This operates in low-income elementary schools nationwide, provides children with a fresh fruit or vegetable snack. It's been shown to be highly effective in increasing the fruit and vegetable consumption among children, and it's doing so without increasing total caloric intake, so hopefully displacing some of the less nutrient-rich foods that the kids might otherwise be eating. So there's lots of opportunities in the Farm Bill to promote nutrition and reduce hunger among low-income families. And as we increasingly think about the fact that food insecurity and obesity are coexisting in the same households and look at strategies to address those dual challenges, it really kind of brings some interesting mix of players to the table and new folks advocating for programs and working together in ways that they haven't before. And one of the ways that I think really symbolizes that kind of tension that it creates is, are these programs welfare programs or are they healthcare programs? And depending on what brings you to the table, you might answer that question differently. The hunger and obesity and health, these are not easy problems to solve. And so you're also dealing with kind of issue complexity and folks having different ideas of how to allocate resources and being the best way to tackle these problems. You know, is it more important to provide enough food to families or provide them with the right food? If we have limited resources, do we want to use those resources to serve more people or to improve the service that we're already providing to existing clients? And so there are no real easy answers to these questions, and the more diverse stakeholders you have at the table, the more kind of differences you have and the frame that you bring and how you might answer those questions. The fact that we're operating in a partisan climate does not help matters. There are a lot of risks to the program, referencing the threats to SNAP that I just mentioned. And when you're in that kind of a high threat environment, it makes people even more insecure and skeptical. So if a new group comes in with interest in some of these Farm Bill nutrition programs and is providing some ideas about how to innovate or strengthen the programs, that can seem really threatening to folks who have been working on the programs for many years. Because, you know, to them that sounds like we're admitting that there's weakness in the programs, even if folks have the best of intentions. And so recognizing that tension of the different stakeholders is important. I really like animation in PowerPoint. So this is my fun slide. In terms of who has an interest in the Farm Bill nutrition title, obviously farmers do. We've talked a little bit about, you know, conservation and sustainable agriculture. The food manufacturers who are taking that farm product and making it into the food that we actually see in the grocery store. Certainly the retailers themselves, hunger advocates, and of course public health. So I want to speak with the time that I have remaining, give a couple of examples of how these different perspectives play out in real life in terms of the coalitions that we work with and the partners that we work with on the national level. I had a really interesting moment through, it was mentioned that I worked through a coalition called the Food Policy Working Group, which is largely anti-hunger, anti-poverty, public health, some community food, seniors groups, kids groups, real diverse range of folks who have an interest in these nutrition programs. And there was a meeting that we had that I really felt like I was in some sort of a marriage counseling. Someone said, we were talking about trying to get the Farm Bill done. This has been going on for years. And so at some point, probably in 2012, there was an effort, maybe even by NSAC, to send a letter that said, you know, we really need to get a Farm Bill done this year. And there was some interest, and this was mostly signed by agriculture groups. And there was some interest among some folks working on the nutrition title to sign this letter. And wouldn't believe the hunger groups just thought that this was the most horrible thing in the world. And I remember sitting in the meeting and someone saying, when you say pass a farm bill now, what I hear is you're okay with $40 billion in SNAP cuts. And it really is talking out what people mean. We speak different languages. We bring very different lenses. And so what's really striking is that if you don't have those relationships or if you don't have opportunities to engage through this multi-sector lens, you don't have the opportunity then to clarify what someone means. You just hear that phrase that sets off, you know, shivers down your spine. How could they possibly say that? How could they possibly have meant this without having the opportunity to kind of clarify intentions? Or to say, hey, maybe would you mind changing your message just a little bit in a way that we can both be happy with? And so we do a lot of work in coalition to try and bridge those kind of nuanced differences. And I think that's proven really helpful. Earlier this year, the Senate proposed some unexpected changes to a couple of smaller programs that I haven't mentioned. They're both grant programs. One is called the Hunger Free Communities Program, which provides grants to local groups to do kind of collaborative strategies to address food insecurity in their communities. And the other is Community Food Project grants, which provides, again, community resources to find long-term solutions to creating your own food security in your community. And so there's a lot of overlap in these programs. I remember working on the 2008 Farm Bill where we got the hunger-free community grants implemented, and someone actually said, a smart staffer actually said, hey, this is pretty similar to community food projects. Could we just make some amendments there? But these were free-flowing money times. We didn't have to worry about kind of streamlining of programs, and we just created a new program. Well, now 5, 6, 7 years later, we do have that kind of budget scrutiny to the programs, and so there was a change made to basically eliminate both the Hunger Free Communities program and the Community Food Projects program. And so I was able to work with Becca and a couple of our other colleagues who had an interest in both programs to come up with some proposed language that would merge the programs. So rather than getting rid of both of them, maybe we could do what we probably should have done in the first place, had we actually had those relationships maybe 7 years ago, and look at how you could combine the programs to serve both purposes. And there's no way that we could have had those conversations had we not had this ongoing opportunity for conversation and relationship building and trust building. And even so, Becca's one of the loveliest people I work with. There still were, you know, moments where you would say a word and you could just tell that it set off some sort of reaction and you didn't know why and you had to talk through and understand why. So I think we both learned a lot from the process, and the issues that we work for are the better for it, that we have that relationship and that we're able to work together to advocate for both of our specific agendas in this broader picture of kind of hunger, nutrition, and health, and community. So look forward to questions and further discussion. I'll just flag that I've got some resources up here, and again, hopefully folks will be able to access the slides afterwards.
Well, a big thank you to all of our panelists. We want to open it up to you all for questions, but there is a couple things that we thought, you know, just sort of as a discussion we could have, and also we'd love, you know, for you all to join in the discussion. And, you know, I think, first of all, Sophie, in your, you know, closing remarks, you really sort of drove home for us the importance of having those relationships, being able to have those conversations, and how, you know, I think you said at the end, we're the better for it. And I'm wondering, you know, could each of you speak a little bit to, you know, how do you go about beginning to engage other sectors, whether it's in farm bill work or perhaps, you know, it could be in other areas too, but how do you go about building those relationships across sectors? I don't know if there's a way, I don't know if people can hear without the mic or if I should try to pass this. Okay.
Yeah. All
right.
We'll be all right.
Okay, great.
So I guess I'll start. I think it starts with just being willing to have conversations without an agenda. So I have known Sophie for several, I'll just give a few examples. I've known Sophie for several years prior to my work with the Pharma School Network. And, you know, what we really did for a couple of years is just talk about how could her work through Feeding America with Food Bank connect with the community food movement. So just kind of having conversations without really having an agenda in mind, not saying we need to work on this specific piece of legislation or we need to get to this end goal with the Farm Bill, just being willing to do that. Since I started with the Pharma School Network in March, another thing that I've done is just kind of ask our board members and other partners that I currently have, who do you think I should be reaching out to? And then I do that. So I've been meeting with the YMCA and meeting with the American Public Health Association.